This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
Philip Rushton asks, if neutron stars spin because of the conservation of angular momentum, do black holes spin too, and how fast?
Well, yes, black holes do spin because they too conserve the angular momentum of either the objects that form the black hole or the things that have fallen into the black hole. The best research that I've found on this focuses specifically on supermassive black holes at the centers of nearby galaxies. A lot of the black holes have disks of gas called accretion disks that are orbiting the black holes, and the part of the accretion disks near the event horizons gets very hot and produces X-ray emission. In the most recent research, modeling the hard X-ray emission from the parts of the accretion disk that are closest to the event horizon indicates that the black holes must be rotating at close to the speed of light. For reference, when black holes rotate, this causes the shape of the event horizon to deviate from the spherical shape, which was originally proposed by Karl Schwarzschild, to resemble something that's more oblate in shape, as proposed by Roy Kerr. This change in shape of the event horizon as a function of rotation is one of the main reasons why it's possible to use models of emission from near the event horizon to determine how fast the black hole is rotating.
James Walters asks, what would we see or experience on Earth if the black hole at the center of our galaxy was active?
So, for reference, one of the more recent estimates for the mass of the black hole, or technically black hole candidate, at the center of our galaxy, which is called Sagittarius A-star, is about 4 million solar masses, or 4 million times the mass of the Sun. In terms of the types of supermassive black holes that you find at the centers of galaxies, this is on the small side. My guess would be that if this black hole was actively accreting matter and ejecting gas and jets, that would look something like a smaller version of the AGN in Centaurus A. And that black hole has a mass which is about 10 times larger than Sagittarius A star. So we would probably see jets of ionized gas ejected perpendicular to the accretion disk. That would most likely appear above and below the Milky Way, as seen from Earth. And these jets would produce electromagnetic radiation ranging from X-rays to radio waves. These jets, as well as the nucleus itself, would appear relatively bright in the sky in terms of X-ray and radio emission specifically. And they would look very bright compared to most other objects in the Milky Way. But at least in terms of X-ray emission, the Sun would still be a brighter source. The region near the black hole itself would probably still be obscured by the interstellar dust in the Milky Way, including the interstellar dust that's very close to the center of the Milky Way. But we may see very strong infrared emission from the accretion disk around this black hole.
Owen Green asks, I've been interested in KELT, as it is with typical astronomer's humor, named the kilo-degree extremely little telescope. What I'm interested in, though, is knowing why it's described as the kilo-degree telescope. My understanding is that its field of view is a lot less than 1,000 square degrees. Can you investigate why it has the name?
For listeners' reference, this question was sent in after a discussion in the July 2017 Jodcast about a discovery from this telescope. KELT is effectively a large camera lens which has been placed in front of a professional astronomical CCD detector. While the telescope is small, it is optimal for making repeated observations of a very large area of the sky, which is very useful for detecting the slight dimming of bright stars when an exoplanet passes in front of them. However, as this listener points out, KELT does not observe an area of 1,000 square degrees. Its detector only covers an angular area of 26 by 26 degrees, which is equivalent to 676 square degrees. To find out why it was called the Killigree Extremely Little Telescope, I contacted Professor Josh Peppers at Lehigh University, who's one of the lead people on the project. He gave me three reasons why they kept Killigree in the name. First, they wanted to emphasize that the telescope covers a wide angular area, and Killigree emphasized this. Even though the telescope did not quite cover 1,000 square degrees, they thought that it was close enough to use the term Killigree. I personally do not quite agree with that specific reasoning, but Josh Peppers stated that this was part of the reason why they chose this name, so I have to list it here. Second, in a paper led by Josh Peppers in 2002 that describes the theoretical concepts behind the design of the telescope, the authors wrote an equation where the variables just happened to spell KELT. They thought that this was so cool that they decided to use that name for the telescope that they described in that 2002 paper. Third, the people developing this telescope chose Killigree, Extremely Little Telescope, to make fun of other telescopes that were being proposed or constructed at the time that emphasized their very large size, such as, for example, the Very Large Telescope. One of those proposed telescopes was the California Extremely Large Telescope, or CELT. The people working on CELT chose their name in part as a humorous reference to CELT. Later, however, CELT changed its name to the 30-meter telescope, so this part of the joke no longer worked. So, to summarize, the K in KELT stands for Killigree, in part because it sounds cooler than using 676 square degree, and in part because the people working on the telescope wanted an acronym that spelled KELT.